Project, we are throwing it back this episode to 2018 with Max Schenk. He is a very memorable name, and he gave us some really good tips on routines. Max is like a big morning routine guy. He's also got a pretty fascinating story of him like going into the forest, I'm pretty sure, on this episode. But since we spoke to him, Max is continuing to thrive at his gym. He's delivering like an awesome message to people online. I think he's just one of those guys where he's just really big on optimizing for like a daily practice. He's not trying to like do anything crazy or shoot for the moon or start like the biggest company in the world, but he is really trying to help people optimize their physical practice. And there's just so much value in this episode. And it was one of the most downloaded episodes we had that year. So it's super valuable stuff.
Yeah, I think his message is so good for, you know, it's not like, hey, this is how you prepare for the ultimate sport, but this is how you just be like super well-rounded and healthy when you train. You know, you like do some snatch, do some backflips, you should be able to do all those things and not have back pain.
Do some backflips, throw those in there, do some handstands, all that good stuff. So pumped to be bringing back this episode with Max. And then of course, guys, supporting this episode today is Blue Blocks. That is the blue light blocking company that we use. So they provide amazing glasses, some of the best light filtering technology, and there's definitely a lot of cheap technology in lenses. There's companies that just, you know, order stuff straight off Alibaba and they just repackage it and they sell it to you, and it's not actually having an impact on the light. But these lenses are clinically tested to ensure that the different wavelengths of light that they claim to block actually are blocked, which makes a huge difference. You know, if I'm going to invest in a really good pair of frames that they provide, I want to know that it's doing the job that it says it's going to do. And that's why we chose Blue Blocks, is because they are actually doing that. They are worth the money. The technology in those lenses is completely legit. And I really think that for those of you that spend, you know, a lot of time on your screens, and that is, you know, you're looking at 3-4 hours on a phone, you're looking at 4-5 hours a day on a laptop, and then you're probably going home at night and watching 2 hours of Netflix. Everyone's pushing somewhere between 7 to 10 hours a day on a screen. The daytime lenses, the clear lenses in a nice frame, these are things that will actually help you ensure that your eyes stay healthy. And I really think that a lot of people are suffering from early stage eye damage and headaches and tiredness and all sorts of stuff related to overexposure of blue light. They can easily be fixed when you pick up a pair of these sorts of glasses, and they're really fashionable. You can wear them at work. They're easy to use. If you know you're going to sit in front of a screen for a while, if you're going to use your phone, definitely throw on a pair of these glasses. So if you guys go to Blue Blocks, that's BLUBLOX. If you Google them, then you can use the code MMP when you check out, and that will give you a 15% discount. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman, and you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
Rocking chair, because you get your feet and your ankles clued in the whole time. You got to do the up and down, so you get all kinds of reps, like pumping, right?
Yeah, right. I didn't think about it.
Several thousand reps in a podcast is pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. Are you what's with all the musical instruments? Are you a in a band, or you just like to play all of them, or what's the go there?
So it's funny you ask. I actually had never touched a musical instrument like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought, like a lot of people assume, like, it's too late. Mm. You know, like, I kind of missed the window. Like, when you're a kid, that's when you're supposed to learn. Like, it'll be too hard now as an adult. But I learned how to play guitar, and I bought a piano and then a drum kit because I wanted to learn about rhythm. Basically, music completely fascinates me because it's all about vibration and rhythm and timing. And music is the most pure study of time, because time is relative, but when it comes to music, it's you have something to measure it against. Like, if you have a tempo that you maintain, that's actually like a consistent time. But like, even the days, the length of the days throughout the course of the year are not consistent. Mm. So like, our idea of what 1 second is, or what 1 hour or 1 minute or 1 day, it's all kind of flexible, actually. But when you have something in time like that, it really helps. The idea of rhythm is huge. I actually, when I'm working with people, I always have them work on basic drumming rudiments to help them improve that athletic quality.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to follow that up, but that's interesting. Okay. Can you drop us a beat before we jump into this? I'm curious. Anything you feel like you would be able to show off most on, piano, guitar, or drums, just a quick.
You want to see me play the saxophone?
Oh fuck! No, yeah, you know, I played the saxophone for like 12 years.
Oh, here we go.
So,
Lachlan's gonna bring out his saxophone right now.
Well, okay. So here's the funny story, though. Check it out. So I had to give a talk in Seattle at the Vigor Ground Conference. It was this like thing with like 250 personal trainers. So the story was, I was like, fuck, I don't know what I'm going to teach these people because I don't know what's the most important. So I thought, oh, fuck, I guess the most important thing is just to like be really memorable, right? And the other most important thing is that it's not really about knowing like some big secret, because that's kind of what people go into it. They're like, oh, I'm going to get this like one secret and that's going to be the difference. It's actually that you're never going to know enough. You just have to go and do it. So what I did is I taught myself to play the saxophone without seeing a video, are you guys still on?
Yep.
Okay. So I taught myself to play saxophone in 2 weeks with no video, no music, no instruction. I didn't even know what all the buttons did, basically. I just went into it with the idea, like, I'm going to fuck around with this saxophone every day for at least 1 hour, and in 2 weeks, I'm going to play on stage.
That's fucked.
And
that is fucked.
Yeah,
oh my God.
It's super fucked, but it worked great. So I'll see if I can play you guys the song that I taught myself in 2 weeks on the saxophone. Hold up.
Would have been better if the saxophone was like upside down. This is going to sound so squishy.
Imagine if you brought it and it's like not even the saxophone.
Yeah.
That's a flute.
I didn't watch one video. He's sucking it instead of blowing.
Oh, he's holding it, right?
Yeah, it looks like good. If he busts out like pro, I'm calling bullshit.
It's supposed to go like this.
Ooh. That was fucking amazing.
Yeah. I can really feel the time thing. The time continuum.
That was awesome.
Oh, that was terrible.
You know there's a button on the back of the thing? Have you pressed the thing on the back?
Oh man, that was awful. Don't clap for that. That was really bad.
Did you know that where you put your thumb on the back, the plastic piece, right next to that, there's a button?
Yeah.
Do you use that button?
Oh, the octave key.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely not. That makes it a higher octave.
Not yet.
No,
yeah,
like,
not
okay,
yet.
So literally, yeah, so literally, oh, actually, it's funny. I do know what that does. So here's the interesting story. When I got the saxophone, I told you, I didn't know what any of the buttons do. I actually still don't know what most of the buttons on that saxophone do.
Mm.
But I learned that the octave key was bent. So everything I played for the first 4 days, the little stopper right at the top was slightly uncovering
open.
The hole. So everything sounded like me like murdering like a herd of cats.
Like a half
and
octave.
And it was like no matter what I did, it was horrific.
Fuck.
So basically I just stumbled upon... So when I played the actual thing, that was dog shit, by the way. It was like no moisture. It was terrible. I forgot to lube up.
Wet the reed, yeah.
I played Twinkle Twinkle Little Star Wars.
Oh.
So it just kind of transitioned like perfectly into the Star Wars theme. It was fucking great.
That's good. That's good. Well, how much saxophones are expensive? Like, that's a big investment.
It was like $200.
Oh fuck, that's a cheap saxophone. Secondhand?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I bought it on Amazon.
Oh wow. Oh yeah, cheap.
Yeah. So it was. It was a really fun time. I actually noticed one of the main things was my breathing got so much better in those 2 weeks. Because, I mean, I basically did like 14 hours of very aggressive breath training. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And, you know, when I talk to people about training their breathing, that's one of the things I asked them. I was like, do you have any interest in playing an instrument like a wind instrument? Because I'll be honest, if you have interest playing a wind instrument, that's the best thing you can do. Because then it's not going to be something that like, oh, you know, I got to sit down or lay down and do like 15 minutes of like, you know, all this breathing exercise shit. Like that doesn't really work long term. If you do something that's fun and rewarding just by the act of doing it, it's much more likely to be something that becomes a part of your life.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I'm a little bit lost of where to start this podcast because we just did a saxophone.
Oh, we're definitely a saxophone. Saxophone.
Yeah, for sure. The saxophone solo, I feel like it's all downhill from here. But
let's just wrap it up.
That's it. The performance. Max Shang. Live, you'll see him.
Live on the Marvel
World
Project.
World tour coming up. The saxophone, 2 week saxophone tutorial. But I think a good place maybe to start, Max, is to inform our listeners and everyone listening right now that this, what you do outside of being a saxophone aficionado, a drummer, a pianist, and a guitarist, and how you help people with movement and training and all that sort of stuff.
Totally. So you don't want me to talk about the tuba that I have in the attic that my friend got me?
We'll do that at the end.
Perfect. So just go ahead and introduce myself now.
Yeah, man. Go for it.
All right. I'll give you the short version. In 2009, I opened up my own gym, Ambition Athletics, which is still in business. It's grown a few times. That's going quite well. I've authored 3 books and like 5 other fitness programs, all related to athleticism and movement primarily. I've also taught over 175 courses on 5 continents at this point as well. So I have a ton of experience coaching coaches as well as just coaching non-coaches. Let's see. I think my main interest right now is really the concept of physical freedom and weaving activity into your daily life and habits, because that's really where you're going to make the biggest improvements.
Hmm. I've seen some stuff. Well, if people check out your Instagram, you're doing sort of a mix of quite a few different things. It seems you've got like the sandbags in there and stuff, and then you got some of the movement and handstand and balance work and all that sort of stuff. What is it like most recently that you've gotten into?
I would say what I'm most excited about right now is just improving the strength and mobility in the feet, because that was something that I neglected for a long time. You know, I can go back to like, I went through every training phase. I started out bodybuilding when I was 18. I got a job as a personal trainer before I had ever touched a weight. It was ridiculous. Mm. So I just was so desperate for money. I answered a job posting on Craigslist, and I basically pretended like I knew how to lift weights during the interview. And so this guy, because I was the only one who showed up to the interview professionally. I showed up like 10 minutes early. I had a tie on. I had a button-down shirt. Mm. Everyone else showed up wearing like sweatpants and shorts and shit. So
amateurs.
I like finagled my way into the job, basically. Building. I did some crossfitting. I did powerlifting. I did Olympic lifting. I went very heavy into kettlebells. Then I went very heavy into calisthenics and, you know, athletic training and all that stuff. And one of the things I ignored at most of those steps of the cycle, especially, you know, kettlebell, powerlifting, Olympic lifting, CrossFit, it just completely neglects the importance of the feet and ankles. I mean, they're literally the foundation for every single thing you do when you're not sitting or laying down, right? Mm. So your nervous system is so focused on your feet, because how your feet hit the ground is going to send a signal to your brain, and that's going to determine your body's strategy for getting all the rest of your joints organized on top of them, right? Mm. So what happens is if you have all these dysfunctions in the feet, whether they're too stiff or too weak, your nervous system will actually downregulate you just like a governor in a car, and it'll prevent you from being as strong and as flexible and as explosive as you possibly could. And even just from a common sense standpoint, it's like an opportunity for energy leakage. You know, the more clear and crisp that contact is with the foot hitting the ground, the less it gives way, the less disconnected it is from everything else, the more tightly that spring will be coiled up, and you can run faster, jump higher, lift heavier weights, things like that. Mm. And there's actually a Japanese proverb that says, we age from the roots up. So everything starts from down there. And if you've ever seen someone with like a foot injury, or if you've ever had a foot injury, you know how completely devastating it is to the entire structure.
Mm. Yeah.
So balancing, especially with the feet, and getting the feet and ankles strong again.
What do you think it is that, like, because if you're running a gym, Ambition Athletics, and then you're trying all these different things that seems like you never really stick to one thing, is it like confusing for the clients that they're like, okay, what do we actually do here? What is this gym actually about? Like, how do you sell it to them as to like what you do? Because people want to feel like they do this thing, you know what I mean? They want to be like, I'm a CrossFitter, or like, I'm a powerlifter, sort of thing. And you're like, yeah, well,
totally.
We kind of threw that out last week. We're doing a bit of it, but now
we're doing
to the
saxophone
next thing.
This week. Yeah.
It's
like, fuck. Yeah. Ruin my cycle.
Everyone grab a saxophone off the rack.
We're going to do breath training today. Everybody get your saxophone down.
Yeah.
No, that's a great question. At the gym, I keep it pretty simple. We focus primarily on function as well as form. And we tend to do more of like the ultimate athleticism template, where we're taking like usually a body weight exercise mixed with some sort of mobility or activation drill that would be beneficial for it. That could be band walks, that could be balancing, that could be some sort of hand-eye coordination drill. And then you'll pair that up with a load-bearing exercise, like a deadlift or a deadlift and a carry, or a sandbag carry or something like that. Once again, with another primer to enhance the effectiveness of that exercise. So we keep the training at the gym pretty simple. My journeys into all these other different types of training is really what has solidified the system that we have at Ambition, which is very heavily related to how do we get people sexy, but also make it so life is really easy and fun for them. So really, like, my idea of training is that you want to give yourself the freedom to try anything without fear. And that's going to require, you know, strong, explosive feet and ankles. So if you decide that you want to try sprinting, you don't have that fear in the back of your mind. And, you know, physical pain and fear are basically like this. They're sort of part of the same thing. Especially as you start looking into the research of like, oh, well, yeah, like only about half the people with a meniscus tear feel pain from that meniscus tear. And like, oh, look at this. Like, all these people with herniated discs and no pain, all these people with no herniated discs and pain, mm. right? So a lot of it is very fear-based. So we really try to get people to move more fearlessly. And the way we do that is by progressively adding in little doses of chaos into the training, but in a safer environment.
Mm. How do you dose that chaos in?
So we'll do like reaction drills with partners. We'll also do some fun games where we'll have partners like grab each other's shoulders and try to like make each other kick over a yoga block. So we'll set up like a couple yoga blocks. Mm. So you have to be kind of like paying attention to what your partner's doing, but also pay attention to your feet so you don't kick the blocks. It's little games like that. You know, one piece of advice I would give to anyone who owns a gym is do partner exercises. Do as many partner exercises as you possibly can, because the gym is really – the gym business, I think, is a lot more about building a good community than actually delivering results, believe it or not. Now, I think it's easy to deliver results because we know that, like, progressive resistance training works. Like, you know, push-ups still work. Push-ups work great, in fact, if you actually do them, right? The secret is – how do you make the training session really fun, very effective, and get people interacting with one another so they develop these solid relationships? And that's why, you know, we got like, I think around 150 gym members, and our turnover rate is like almost non-existent. So we've been pretty much retaining like the vast majority of our clientele because we make it something that people look forward to. You know, the first mistake you can make is to try to do a workout. The key is to understand how the body works and go do things that are fun and challenging. Like, I have this, like, laser focus on the idea of a fun challenge because that's how you naturally improve. It doesn't require any willpower. You know, anytime you throw willpower into the mix or like, oh, you have to do this exercise and you have to do it for this long, it gets really difficult to get the vast majority to stick with it. So I think when you add something like a partner exercise that's also really fun, and you give people that healthy dose of semi-chaotic fun challenges, it's a total game changer.
I guess we threw a little bit of chaos in there at the balance games the other week. We did like a, we did sort of like a in-house competition, but it wasn't really a competition. So there was no prizes. Oh no, sorry, there was prizes.
It was just a very friendly competition.
Yeah, there wasn't really supposed to be prizes. It was more just like a reward for a thing. Anyway, it wasn't super competition focused, and we didn't want to make it super fitness focused either. We wanted to make it fun.
Right.
And we did this one event that was like blindfold. So with your partner, they wore the blindfold and then they had to do sandbags over the shoulder. So like obviously they're throwing a sandbag, they have to turn around and find the sandbag and do it again. And then they would get down into bear crawl.
That's great.
And they would bear crawl through an obstacle course.
Blindfolded.
Yeah. And the only way would be their partner to guide them, right? To guide their voice. And so it was like a communication
deal
as well.
That's a great idea.
Which is so much more difficult than we thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, well, because what happens is the best way to call to your partner is to be in front of them as they're crawling and you backing up, which means that your left is their right and your right is their left. So you can already see how this is causing extreme chaos. And so as they're sprinting through the course wanting to win, completely blindfolded, partner screaming, left, 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 they take a hard right, but it's noisy, so they can't hear the correction. They're going full pelt, confident that their partner has given them the correct direction in a gym with metal poles for rigs.
Oh shit.
And so we had one guy go full steam ahead, probably concussed.
Oh, so hard he hits the pole.
So hard. Like if you got a barbell and you got like you just did like a 50% twist and slammed the barbell into the pole, same exact sound. And he healed over like a wounded dog, and he kept his blindfold on and refused to take it off. Like if that happened to me, it's blindfold off and I'm like, this is fucked. And he kept
it
on.
I'm going home if that happens immediately.
He kept it on and finished the race going really fucking slow and just using his hand to just like pat the path in front of him because he was so traumatized from being slammed into a pole. It's good blindfolds. It just showed the blindfolds we were wearing like legitimately worked. But yeah, that's how we put our chaos in. Yeah,
that's the main takeaway from that story is the blindfolds were very effective.
Oh, crazy effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really a cool idea. Anytime you get someone's brain working a little bit differently during the exercise too, like we'll do something at my... Essentially, it's just the way it sounds. You have people running back and forth, and you call out forward, backward, left, or right, And whatever you call is how they have to run, but they always change directions each time. So if you're running this way and I say backwards, you go backwards the other way. If I say left, you go left, but you go this way. If I say right, you go right, but this way. So it's always like you're going back and forth, but you got to listen for what the person says to determine how you're going to run.
Mm. That makes sense.
And what you'll find is that when you do that, people get fatigued much quicker. And this is true for sport too. So it's very important if you want to prepare someone for the rigors of sport from a conditioning standpoint that you have some sort of cognitive function to perform. Otherwise, what you're doing doesn't really have a good carryover.
Mm.
Why? Because they have to be switched on in sport because like balls are flying or it's things they're not used to?
Right. You have to be thinking the whole time. Mm. Like you have to be able to have your body working and your brain working at the same time.
Mm.
And they need to be able to perform different tasks at the same time. You know, it's not going to be like riding on a stationary bike. Like you can get really good cardio, obviously, on a stationary bike or on like a fan bike or something like that. But it's just not going to translate even to like a cycling race where you have to be like maneuvering and positioning yourself, right?
Mm.
It's a totally different thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you probably know George St. Pierre. He was on Joe Rogan recently and he described how he would prepare for fights, and one of the fights he prepared for was he was just describing the same thing that you just described. People that basically work at a higher like cognitive output will fatigue faster than fighters who don't. So BJ Penn, when he fought him, he said had like the fastest reaction time out of any person he'd ever fought. Like they studied it like frame by frame, and he had the fastest reaction time. So whatever you did, BJ Penn, out of anyone that he was going to come up against, could react faster. But because he can react faster and he's using that high neural output, he can fatigue faster. So George would use lots and lots of feints and make him react a lot without actually expending a lot of energy to bring his like nervous system, to fatigue his nervous system. And then his reaction time would slow down to like regular fighters, and then George could land like his combinations. I thought that was like so interesting analyze that.
Really cool.
Yeah, so his whole game plan at the start was just heaps of feints to like tire him out, basically to the point that he would see his reaction time slow down, and then he could move in and like execute on winning, which obviously he did. So,
oh man,
pretty nuts.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's nuts. So, Max, what are you doing now that you're not like, we listened to a podcast with you on it, and you were talking about you're traveling quite a bit, so you're not always at your gym. And that's something that Raf and I do. Or I've been doing more of, which is traveling and stuff. And what's your advice for people that, or how do you manage traveling a lot and still owning and running a gym, like from distance?
Having a good system in place to make it really easy for the workers to do their work and really easy for the customers to pay you. Those are like the main ones.
Mm-hmm.
Make it really easy for your staff to do their job and make it really easy for the customers to pay.
Okay.
And then from there, it's, you know, simple things like customer service, like making sure the phone calls get returned every day. Because, like, you know, at my gym, we don't need someone there all day waiting by the phone. But people need a call back and email, same thing. Really, it comes down to having, like, a good system in place and having the right people. That's really everything.
Yeah.
You know, having the right people and having a good system to make it simple for your people to do their job and simple for the customers to pay you and enjoy the service.
Yeah, that's something that we definitely have had to learn recently, but getting better at is, you know, finding the right people. So we've conducted quite a lot of interviews in the last sort of month, 2 months. What do you look for when you're trying to find the right people?
Charisma and willingness to learn. You're saying for a coach?
Yeah.
Probably charisma and willingness to learn.
Yeah. How do you test that in an interview?
Very tip top. What's that?
How do you test that in an interview?
I would ask someone a lot of questions about themselves personally. I want to know like a lot about their past work experience. I want to know if they've had experience selling something before. That's usually very good, because it teaches people to be really, really nice and also focus on the customer, you know? And the reason I look for that so much is because that's the one thing you can't teach. And You know, one of the mistakes I actually made was getting someone who's very experienced as a coach, but had like no charisma. And you can like have every good intention of being like, hey, come on, I need you to get like more excited for class. I need you to like get like ambitious about like helping like grow the business and things like that. And if someone's not that, you can't force them to be that way. So I think you have to like look for the natural characteristics of a person. And as long as they're open to learning your system, because the last thing you want is someone to come into your gym and teach their system, right?
Yep.
So you don't actually need to get someone with a ton of coaching experience. You really want someone. So I think it's a little bit more work for the owner on the front end, training wise, but I think it's much better in the long term if you can simplify what you do down for someone who's like relatively green, and as long as they have the right attitude, which, you know, is everything, like that's really the number one thing I look for. Beyond that, it comes down to the basics, like actually caring about the customers, punctuality, professionalism. Like there are a lot of things like that, but really it's all the attitude. They got to really want to be there in a big way, and really want to be there for the clients in a big way. Like I would say, two of the best hires I have made, one had like no experience training people. She just worked out at my gym, mm-hmm. and was looking for maybe a change. And I said, you know what, let's coach you up. And her classes are packed. They love her. It's great. And she's just really caring and enthusiastic and attentive. And those things really matter a lot. You know, obviously there's like the technical side of things. And, you know, you both know that what the mechanics of a squat and a push-up probably should look like. And those are relatively easy to teach someone to do. You know, as long as you have a good understanding of the material and you know your system, you can bring that to those other people.
Yeah, well, like you said, the gym is a lot about the community and building the community. And like the pillars of your community are your coaches. Unless you're an owner that like coaches every class, ultimately,
yeah.
Then like, yeah, you need your coaches to be strong pillars, to be like people that, when your gym members are talking to their friends about the gym, often they're probably going to talk about their coach or the coaches at the gym.
Big time.
You know, that's probably one of the big things that they'll harp on about. And if they're not something to talk about, it's unlikely they're going to like sell the program to, you know, their friends that don't really care that much about
the back end payment service.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good at emails. Yeah. It's like, no, not really. They're like, you got it. I got this awesome coach. They're like this, they're like that. They do this incredible stuff, blah, blah, blah. And so it's like, it's a people business, right? So yeah, like you said, it's finding those right people. They're so important.
It's also funny because I find with the interviews that we've done, usually the concern of the people that are applying is that they don't know enough about training or don't know enough about everything. They're like, I think I could be good, but you know, if someone as good as you came in to see me, like, I don't know if I could help you, or like, I don't know if I know as much as you about training, like, what should I read? And that's like usually the last problem.
Mm.
And they're like almost never worried about their like, you know, relationship management skills, or their selling abilities, or whatever it is.
Or
like
communication.
Yeah, they never even think about it. And they're so worried about the training, and nearly every one of them, like, oh, the training's fine. And if it's not, we'll just learn it. Like,
yeah.
It's the last thing I'm worried about.
I'm not worried about it at all. Yeah. If anything, someone that's
totally
more green
agree.
Is better.
Yeah, totally. I mean, really, you got to consider like who your market is too, right? The vast majority of the population would benefit so much from 8 weeks of like side planks, rows, sled pushes, and sandbag carries, and maybe do some push-ups. You know, like you don't really need to do anything like too fancy. You just need to be engaging, and you know. The partner exercises, once again, are a really good way for the coach to connect with people, especially if it's like a one-on-one environment. That's huge.
Max, do you find people that are coming to you a lot for like rehab sort of work? Like potentially they've done a lot of CrossFit or powerlifting or something, they've got that back?
To me personally?
Yeah.
I would say that's the majority of the people that I see, and mainly because of the success of Simple Shoulder Solution. That's done tremendously well. Like, I had a guy drive down to see me just to tell me that it helped him. It was great.
Oh, wow.
Like, he just randomly showed up at the gym. He's like, Max. I was like, hi. and he's like, dude, you fixed my shoulder. I'm like, dude, I don't even know you yet. How did I do that? And then, so he turned out to be like really cool. We like did a little workout and like that was great. So I think that's how most people know me now, is from 5 Minute Flow and Simple Shoulder Solution. So that's the majority of what I get. Yeah.
Well, what is the premise of Simple Shoulder Solution?
It's a simple solution for your shoulders.
That's it.
No, I mean, basic. Okay, so I'll give you the basic rundown. Actually, I've had like all kinds of messed up shoulder issues, like torn stuff, hurt stuff, like bad, right? And I went to go see a lot of people, and I learned so much about the shoulder. I'm fascinated by the shoulder because the glenohumeral joint, the ball and socket on the end, is the most mobile joint in your entire body. Like, it's capable of such a wide variety of intensity and range of motion. The problem that I saw was that most of like the shoulder stuff was like hyper focused on this, but Simple Shoulder Solution looks more globally at the big picture and goes like step by step through a lot of different areas that help provide that foundation. So we go all the way to like your core and your breathing as like the first layer. And then from there, we go into like mobilizing the thoracic spine and the cervical spine, so mid back and then the neck. And then from there, you take it to the next level, which is the scapula. And a lot of problems happen at these steps. And that's just where the problem is felt in the shoulder. So people feel like, ah, my shoulders hurt. But really, it's like, no, you don't know how to breathe. Your core is shit. Your thoracic spine is essentially frozen and your scapula doesn't move at all. Like, that's the reason your shoulder hurts. So my system is basically a simple way to like address all of those foundational issues and reintegrate everything back together.
Mm.
That's cool. Yeah, I do say that a lot. It's almost always wherever you go, if someone know what they're doing, you end up working on your spine in some way when you come in with a shoulder problem.
That's a pretty safe bet most of the time. I mean, just the fact that some people can rotate like 80% further one way than they can the other way.
Yeah.
And then I evaluate that and they never know. It's so strange. Like, how did this happen?
And also they're trying to use something with imbalances that is symmetrical, like a barbell. And so it really hurts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feeds into that imbalance rather than addresses it.
That's right. Yeah. Which is ultimately why someone like Julien Pinot is not as keen to throw people straight into the barbell as he is to work on some really basic stuff first with, you know, dumbbells and sandbags.
Totally.
Before he gets into more complex barbell
movements. Oh, man. Yeah, I really like that guy. He's a good dude. I actually went and took one of his courses. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, I think the stuff that he's doing is pretty cool. I just hope that he's able to keep getting his message out there and more people keep listening to it and keep trying it. It's pretty good. The problem is, I reckon that we have butchered so much of the sandbag work because of, I don't know, it's just like hard to sell to the clients a little bit, is what we found.
Mm.
Because, you know, you can go really deep down a rabbit hole about all the different torque chains and, you know, using the sandbag for this. And
you can.
Yeah.
Right.
And ultimately, people are like, hey, can we still do a deadlift? You're like, well, okay, fine. And then you kind of have to, put aside what you know and give a little bit of what people want, you know? So, yeah.
That's always the balancing act whenever you're coaching fitness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it's tough. And so, And then what about 5 minute flow? How do you feel like that got popular, or what made that so popular?
You know, 5 minute flow was the result of my study into the field of volition, which is like how people make choices. And I was trying to think, my favorite thing to do is like simplify things down to like their basic essence, right? And so my main goal on this planet is to help people move better and live better and make life easier and all that good stuff, right? So I was thinking, where is the best place for that journey to start that would have the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time? And the obvious answer after all this thought, and that's the beauty of things that are obvious, is they're only obvious after the fact.
Yeah.
nothing's obvious ahead of time. It's always obvious later. You need to build a habit early. It needs to have no barriers, and it needs to be very effective. So no barriers means like you don't need to buy any fancy equipment. You don't need to learn anything really. So suggesting that people do 5 minutes of mobility training in the morning, 5 minutes of movement, joint circles, whatever, and then cap it off with a couple glasses of water is the easiest thing you can do to kick off your day on the right foot. Because I have this idea that when you wake up, you've been frozen basically for between like 5 and 10 hours, depending on how long you sleep.
Mm.
And every step you take upon waking is going to reinforce that frozen body, right?
Mm.
In rehab, that's what they talk about a lot, because walking is almost entirely reflexive. Like you do it pretty automatically. That's a good way to kind of like download the new information once you do like a rehab exercise on someone. You have them do a thing, you have them take a walk. So if you've been frozen for like 8 hours and then you don't do anything to unfreeze yourself, basically the way that you walk around is going to be congruent with your frozen state rather than your mobile state. So if you do a 5 minute flow in the morning, every step you take after that is like corrective exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this like really solid foundation. Obviously, hydration is hugely important too, because that's the longest you go typically without drinking water as well. So you need to be rehydrated. And it's so simple. Anybody can do it. I actually have people, I still get emails every day from people who have been doing it for consecutive years. And that's really where you make the biggest improvement, no matter what it is you're trying to do, is if you can string together a really like years of a behavior, not like 8 weeks, which is how we're sold shit, right?
Mm.
We're sold like, oh, here's this like 4 week plan to have 20 inch arms and a 15 pack abs or some shit. Probably should be an even number. Maybe like an eight, maybe it's like an 18 pack. What's a 15 pack? But that's basically the idea. So it's something that people can actually stick with forever. So I'm really excited about that. Prioritizing your mobility is obviously very beneficial. It's just that a lot of people don't invest the time. The other really nice thing about 5 minute flow is that it's an anchor habit. And what that means is that you can attach other stuff onto it very easily once it's established. That's one of the biggest things I've noticed with habit formation, the research I've done, but also just like myself, is when you have a pre-existing habit, it's really easy to attach stuff to it if it's already anchored there. So I'll use waking up in the morning as the perfect anchor. Taking a shower is also the perfect anchor for any kind of habit. So I usually suggest that people do, like Hindu push-ups and squats and things like that before they hop in the shower. I used to say, hey, just do like push-ups throughout the day. But people don't do that because they don't want to get sweaty. Right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, how do we remove that barrier? Oh, well, do it right before you get in the shower. Just make it like part of that habit. So I still do some sort of like push-ups and squats before I get in the shower every time. And it's not a lot. And that's actually like one of the biggest things that I think about, is people assume that if you do just a minute of something, it's not going to work. You know, there's this idea that something has to be kind of painful. Like, yeah, it's good, right? And it's not that hard, actually. So people assume that if it's not that hard, it's probably not that effective. I've even met a lot of people do workouts because they're like, oh, I only had 15 minutes, right?
Mm.
So it's kind of like compound interest with investing. Those little tiny bits over the long term come in huge. I do the same thing in the kitchen. Where I turn the stove on, I always go over to the countertop and I do dips or L-sits or something like that. Because it doesn't seem like it's a lot. But when you've done that for the span of years, it's extremely significant, right?
Yeah. No, it's like it's that pre-programming so that it's like almost automatic. For certain things, it's like you know, it's the one thing I've been observing is like every morning, because I'm a big believer that everything we do is like pattern based. So it's like when you realize your patterns, then you can change them. But only then can you realize them. And actually, your whole day is just like a connection of different patterns. And a pattern starts when you initiate it with like say like an anchor point or something, right? Getting to the gym. Your pattern is to do this, or like this person talks to you, your habit is to do this. If it's Sunday, like your pattern is to do this, whatever it might be. And my pattern is
absolutely
my pattern. I have less internal rotation in my right hip, and every single morning when I put pants on, it's like my left leg comes up between my arms for the first pant leg, and then for the second pant leg, my
right leg goes out.
That's right. Yeah, it doesn't go in between, and it's like how many reps? I've been doing so many reps. Of the first knee flexion in the morning, like, is just falling outwards. And so I've been, like, putting extra effort into bringing it in between. And, like, it's getting easier. And it's like, that's one rep in the whole day. Well, maybe not in the whole day, but, you know, it's definitely the one conscious rep in the whole day. Of just going that little bit
Hopefully
more every time I wake up.
Hopefully you're taking your pants on and off a few times throughout the day.
Once. Yeah. A few times.
It's so tough for him with the internal rotation, though. Yeah. He tries to stick to once.
Yeah. Same pants I trained in. Same pants I go to bed in. Yeah, it's all the same. And, but that's just like an idea of like a pattern that you'd get stuck in that would like fix your movement.
I agree with you 100%. I actually do the same thing with putting on my shoes. So it takes like no extra time, really. I put my shoes and socks on the floor. I pick up a sock with my foot, grab it with my foot, and pass it to my opposite hand behind me. And then I'll put the sock on while standing on one leg. And then I'll do the same thing. I'll put the shoe on standing on one leg. And that, once again, it doesn't seem like much, but now by the end of it, I've got like 30 seconds of extra single leg balancing and hip flexion and foot coordination and all this shit.
Hmm.
And it's funny that you talk about patterns, because I just had this thought that I wrote down the other day. It's like humans are essentially the same as Pavlov's dog. It's just we don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like everyone's like, oh, look at that stupid dog salivating because the bell rang. Ha, ha, ha. But then anytime something rings, everyone's like checking their pockets and like, oh my God, what was that ringing sound?
Mm-hmm. You know?
So the more you accept what you just said, which is that we're totally creatures of habit. We're totally driven by patterns. If you accept that, you can benefit from it. If you try to deny it, you're going to end up fighting it your whole life.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know why people think it's so negative. I think people just don't like the fact that they're being, or that they're not in control almost. And if you realize that your trigger and then response, people feel like, oh, no, I have free will. Like, I decide when, you know, when I want to, you know, check
my phone.
I decide
which way my knee goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But like you said, the reality is the opposite. You have very little free will with a lot of things because they're so, you know, inbuilt, pre-programmed from everything that you've done in the past leading to whatever that moment is. So it's actually interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to ask a question. You had like some challenge thing going on your Instagram. That you're like challenging people to do. What was the idea behind that?
You know, so I'm working on a new project actually right now called Crawl, Climb, Carry, which is basically an even more like simplified like basic fitness. And that was I thought those challenges would be really good benchmarks for some simple tasks like that that really have a high carryover to once again moving more fearlessly. I think being able to carry something is a necessary human skill. I think being able to crawl is one of the best ways to improve your relationship with the ground. And I think that climbing is so natural. Even if you just hang off of your kitchen sink for 5 minutes.
Sounds easy.
Yeah. You know, honestly, it's if you hang in like a deep squat with your hands inside your kitchen sink, you get like a really good stretch, just kind of like you would from a hang. You also get some good squat mobility. So I think those three things are daily necessities, right, as far as I'm concerned. Even if it's just one set of each, like why wouldn't you at least once do some sort of climb, some sort of crawl, and some sort of carry? And the truth is, like, if you're not willing to every day like pick up the sandbag one time, put your hands on the floor and do some push-ups or crawling one time, if you're not willing to do that like hang on the low rings, even in like a deep squat, and move around and just kind of appreciate that position, like the truth is you're just not really committed to taking good care of yourself. I think those three things are like so essential for getting the human body to move well. So I think those are huge. As far as the other challenges, like there was also like a balance challenge. Part of the reason for that is I don't see people balance well. You know, I have all this data from people I've coached over the years, people who have just come to the gym, people I've seen in courses. And no matter what your favorite style of exercising is, whether it's barbells or kettlebells or dumbbells or CrossFit or whatever, almost nobody has good balance. It's like very interesting to me. I have people stand on a 2x4 with just the balls of their feet and do some like arm patterns or juggling, and it goes to shit immediately because they have no sensitivity in their feet. They have like no ability to like really balance in a way that's meaningful. So I think the challenges, the fun challenges, kind of circling back to what I said before, the fun challenge is like the holy grail of fitness because it gets you in this like, ooh, I want to try that. Like that looks like it could be fun, but I'm not sure if I can do it. And that's exactly the sweet spot you want to be in. That looks fun and I'm not sure if I can do it, but I can definitely try without being afraid.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, it's very much like sport in a way. When, you know, there's a basketball or something and people are trying to shoot it in the hoop and they could be trying for like 20 minutes and they're just like destroyed by the end of it because they tried so hard for 20 minutes, you know? But they didn't have to, like force it. It wasn't like, all right, go shoot hoops for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They just did it until they didn't want to do it. And it's a good way of doing it. I wanted to circle back a bit to when you were doing some powerlifting stuff, currently doing some of it myself, but experiencing a lot of lower back stress, not necessarily pain. And then one of my coaches we think he injured his disc doing some deadlifts as well.
He's also got the like muscle in his back, you'd probably imagine.
Yeah, which is a shame because he was an iron warrior for a while until recently. He's never really had anything serious. So where do you kind of sit in terms of when the like pushing strength to the upper limits? Like when do you just go, okay, enough is enough? Or
it depends on the individual. Like when I was younger, I like would not rest until I had a 600-pound deadlift, and so I was doing deficit deadlifts and rack pulls and shit like that. And really focused on what's that?
You get there?
Yeah, actually. So I got 600 off the floor to lock out. My best lift, I think, actually, was I pulled 585 from the top of my feet.
Oh, wow.
So like super as deficit as you can get, like the bar was touching the top of my feet at the bottom. You know?
That's massive.
It's massive. And it wasn't like a healthy thing to do. Like that was just because I was like really pretty obsessive and I knew that. And the thing is, I made sure that I owned the full spectrum. Like back then, I didn't do as good a job as I would do now, but owning the full spectrum of competitions and tempo, especially, I think that's a place where people lose a lot of benefit is they don't do anything slow. You know, I have this video, it's like 10 minutes long for free on YouTube about the secret of speed when it comes to strength training. And it's like, and actually that's another lesson that I pulled from music, because I'll actually set the metronome for music at like 40 or 30. So like really slow.
Yeah.
Because that is really how you can play with time, right? You can really appreciate every detail of the deadlift. So I think that's how I would approach it now. I would make sure to hit the full spectrum of rep ranges. I would make sure to hit the full spectrum of tempos. And I would be sure to use, obviously bilateral and unilateral exercises. And I think those are really the main things I would do. When it comes to pushing your deadlift up, you don't want to go too heavy too frequently, because it tends to like burn people out. But you can do things like push and pull sleds a lot for recovery, and single leg deadlift, and do all kinds of natural leg curl type of movements.
Yeah,
I think those get neglected quite a bit too. You know, all the even those like West Side guys are doing all kinds of reverse hypers and stuff, but you know, the truth is, like, the simple leg curl on the Swiss ball or on the TRX or the rings or something like that, where you keep the hips in extension the whole time and train the hamstrings as both a knee flexor and a hip extensor, dude, it's crazy beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the knee flexion definitely gets missed a lot in, like, functional fitness facilities and gyms and that sort of thing. Heaps.
Right. The more functional your training gets, the worse your joints feel.
Oh, fuck. That
is spot on. Like, that is spot on.
Yeah, that's accurate. That is fucking accurate.
Yeah, nothing made my elbows feel better than going back to curls.
There's this one gym.
I was just going to say curls. Exactly. You hit it.
Yeah.
I see people like trashing on curls. I'm like, oh, so your elbows don't feel good, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I would say now that I just don't think it's like, I think it's negligent to program like strength training without arms 2-3 times a week. You've got to have the arms in there.
Yeah. Well, just compound and isolation. Yeah. But people are like, functional, what? Isolation's not functional. It's like, well, what is functional?
It's because they go all or nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing is more functional than a curl. Have you ever carried something in front of your body?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Your arms are fucking bent.
Yeah.
The whole time. Nobody carries shit with their arms straight. You can barely carry grocery bags like that because they're too long. They'll drag on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost every carry is done with a bent arm.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. There's like this one studio franchise that's like kicking off at the moment, Max, called F45. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's.
I have heard of it.
Yeah. And so it's called Functional 45,
that's
right?
That's the problem.
He's heard of it. Yeah. Yeah, that is the problem.
Trust me. I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, no one is. No one is, really. And except the guys that are selling, you know, $30,000 per year franchise fees to their franchisees. And it's functional, right? But it's the least functional training that you could ever be doing, because they made it so simple that anyone can do it. Battle ropes, bench hops, TRX rows and all this stuff, and banded pull-ups and stuff. But they're all good exercises in the spectrum of all exercises, but they're the only exercises. And they do those for 45 minutes daily. Sometimes people do 2-3 classes because they're so easy to do, because you can keep doing them over and over and over again, that they get...
It's pretty wild.
They get really bad RSI. You know, they get really bad elbow pain. They get scapular issues. They come into our gym and they are so weak. I'm like, how long have you been there for?
Yeah.
Oh, like 3 years. I'm like, you've been training for three years and you can't press yourself up off the floor or pull your chin over the bar. Like, you've just been wasting your time.
Well, you know, it's part of a bigger problem, which is the idea that exercise is like a caloric balancer rather than a life affirming experience.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, look at how blasé people are about the magic that is the human body at this point. It's like we're so desensitized to how amazing this whole structure is that we're just like, ah, well, fuck it. It's like, you know, you eat food and then you got to burn off the calories. Like, that's the whole thing. And it's like, no, like, you don't understand. This structure that you have is capable of a tremendous amount of really fun and engaging things that will become a huge part of the enjoyment in your life.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, you're going to turn to other things. You know, if you don't have some sort of physical outlet that's like fun and rewarding and where you can build skills over the long term. That's why I like to pair something like deadlifts with hand balancing, because you have two different paths that you can walk. You know, you can push the deadlift up in weight, and that's pretty cool. Nothing wrong with that. And you can also gain skills in hand balancing forever. And so the process itself becomes rewarding, rather than like checking your fucking Fitbit to see how many calories you didn't burn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and every marketing is the same way. So it's like, you know, the cold therapy, even people are marketing the cryotherapy as all these calories you're going to burn afterward.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, you'll burn this many calories in the sauna. You'll burn this many calories in the cryo chamber. And it's like everything, you know, whatever. It's like how many calories you burn.
Yeah.
No, it would be like racing a car to see how bad a gas mileage you could get.
Chewing through petrol.
Yeah. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, I did 10 gallons today.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you went. It doesn't matter how fast you went. It just matters how much fucking gas you can burn.
Yeah. That's true. That's
Car's broken and shit, like missing a wheel. Like, dude, the wheel fell off. It's actually increased how much petrol I use.
Yeah.
So much resistance, so much friction. Yeah, that's a good analogy. It still fascinates me how accurate the car analogies can be to the human body.
Yeah, it's never ends. Hey, never
it
ends.
Never ends. It never ends. So good.
Yeah, the amount of times I've had people like, oh, you know, you treat your car, but then you treat your body, or like you put better stuff in your car than you do it in your body. Usually is pretty true.
Yeah.
It's very true. And the interesting thing about those sayings, though, is the people who don't follow them go, oh yeah, I've heard that one before.
Always. Always.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, all those old sayings are still true.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, the whole reason we still even know what they are, like, there are phrases like that we know from pre-internet that are still around. And the reason they're still around is because they're powerfully true.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the people who don't pay attention to that advice at all are like, oh yeah, I know that. And then they just don't do that.
No, that's true. It's not like we went and did a bunch of scientific research on different quotes and different sayings to debunk them.
Yeah, that's true.
Mythbusters are not going out there and doing that.
All right,
well, I wanted to jump to the final four questions unless you had an additional thing you wanted to
I did have one other question I wanted to ask. I saw you, I think you mentioned it earlier, that you carry like the 150 kilo sandbag. I thought we've been carrying sandbags now for
150.
Was that correct? 150 kilos?
No, it's actually like more like 140.
It's a big fucking sandbag.
Oh, fuck.
And we've been carrying them for a while, and I would say I don't really know if my sandbag carrying has got any better or any heavier. So what would be your tips for actually getting better at carrying sandbags? Because I couldn't even fucking roll a 140 across the gym to put it back in its place.
I mean, it really depends. Like, I've been carrying heavy shit for a long time. I also, once again, I run like a pretty wide spectrum. So I think that, you know, everything is like a wave. It waves up and down. And I'm really good at listening to my body and knowing when it's time to go light and long and short and heavy. And I don't make any decisions before like the third set, typically, if I'm actually going to go in and do some work, because you just never know. how you're going to feel a few sets in. So I kind of just ride the wave on that. But I'll do like 100 pounds. No, not 100. I can do like 120 pounds for like 10 straight minutes with some squats in there. Jeez. I'll do like a... walking around the neighborhood. And, you know, a lot of it is just mental. And as far as like the heavy sandbags are concerned, I got a lot of volume in on like searchers pretty early on, and I think that has like pretty phenomenal carryover to sandbag.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing about the sandbag is I really like to combine squats and carries together. So that was like my challenge, if you guys saw the carry challenge,
yeah,
was to take at least your body weight in a sandbag and do 5 squats, carry 100 feet, 5 squats, carry 100 feet, 5 squats again. So it was like 3 rounds, basically,
yeah,
of 5 squats and a carry with your body weight. And my goal actually was to do 5, but I did not get there. It was a little too tough. I was using a heavier sandbag, but 5 rounds of 5 with the long carry, it was just brutal. Mm. But I think that is a really good way to build up, is to like carry a little bit, do some squats, carry a little bit, do some squats. That's really helped people move up the best. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, I have people, so our gym is like, we have the turf area, it's like 40 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll have people do that. We'll do 5 squats, carry down and back, 5 squats. I mean, I got ladies doing it with like 70 pounds. I got one girl at my gym doing it with 100 pounds. It's like absurd. So combining those together and then once again hitting the full spectrum of durations. You know, sometimes you just carry a sandbag like 20 feet. And sometimes you carry a really light sandbag for like 20 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. Because sometimes
that's helped me the most.
Because sometimes you'll need to like carry your groceries home for like 20 minutes, or sometimes you'll need to lift like a fucking piano by yourself, like to the other room.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Or lift the car. Bring the car back in somehow. No, that's good. I think the only problem with our sandbag collection is it's like 7 sandbags over 100 kilos.
Yeah.
14 sandbags under 30 kilos. Nothing in between.
We've got some savage jumps. It's like, cool, you're like really mastering the 30. Welcome to the 100.
Yeah. Are you ready to triple what you've been carrying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really time to psych up. Yeah. Right about now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, tell them if they can do 20 minutes with the light sandbag, then they're ready to move up.
Yeah, there yeah. you go. That's right. All right, cool. We'll jump into the final 4 questions, Max. Preparing for these, Max?
I sure did.
All right, fantastic.
All right. Only because you told me to in the email. That-
that's right. Yeah. Oh, shit. We got a notepad. All right. So, what is your favorite type of saxophone? Alto saxophone? Tenor saxophone? I'm just kidding. Let me just check my notes.
The fuck? Oh, my God. I don't have this in the notes.
Yeah. So, our first question, the interview question. So, if there was a person you could sit down with, and chat to an interview, and they would answer everything that you ask them openly and honestly, who would you choose that's alive today?
You know, that was the toughest part, was alive today.
Mm.
And I know who I would have chosen before, and it's Ray Dalio. And it's an interesting story, because I actually recommended to Tim Ferriss that he get Ray Dalio on his podcast.
Wait, Ray Dalio is dead?
He's alive.
No, he's alive.
Oh, okay. Actually. Yeah. Oh, right.
So if I were to interview, but he already got interviewed.
Okay.
And like, so his book Principles was one of the best books I've ever read. I read it like 10 years ago, and it's basically a life and business book about like finding out what your core values are and really like simplifying everything down to get what you want out of life. Like, he has a really simple process of like, you know, really take the time and think for yourself what you want, then accept what is true. So like, look around and see, okay, what do I want? What's true? And what's the best plan to achieve that? And then you just keep reorienting toward that. Because the more books I read, the more I realize like, well, fuck, it's really more about how frequently you can reorient toward that main task, right? So you guys probably have like a primary vision, and the success of that primary vision is going to be completely hinged on how frequently you both can come together and hit and get refocused and laser pointed in on that. So I just really loved that book that Ray Dalio wrote. He's like a huge hedge fund manager. He owns a company called Bridgewater. And what I like about his company is they have an idea meritocracy. So basically, the best idea always wins. It doesn't matter where it comes from. They record every single meeting. Every person is 100% responsible for the words that they use. And the level of communication is second to none. And I think that, you know, obviously we're talking mainly about fitness here, but in terms of like existing in the world more effectively and happily, being able to clearly, kindly, and honestly communicate is one of the most underrated skills that I think most people don't even bother to try to cultivate.
Mm. Yeah. I've been trying to find that book for so long. Every time I go into a bookstore after listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast, I haven't been able to... they just don't have it. And I didn't even realize it's been out for 10 years.
Yeah, I read it for free online. You put it out for free online when I was like 20.
Is that I think that was a different version. I thought he had like one version that he brought out that was like for his employees, and then he put it out to everybody. And then like more recently, he's repackaged it into a full book.
Oh, really?
Exactly. It's repackaged. Yeah. Exactly. Like I have a copy. I got copies for my whole staff. And that's the other thing too, is like you can buy people books, but they won't necessarily read them all the time, and they might not be as excited as you are about the content.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate.
That is a constant. Everyone gets so excited about a book, they hand it to you, and then 30 seconds later, they're like, "Dude, is you look like mind blown?" It's like, "Nah, dude, I probably won't even pick it up."
Yeah.
It's like I'm just not as excited as you are right now.
Yeah,
right. You know, if I had to like interview one other guy, there's this totally crazy dude. His name's Steven Jepson. He's completely insane, but he's got like the best attitude ever. He's like 70 years old, and he does all kinds of like balance and coordination stuff, and like jumps over little hurdles in his backyard. It's really great. Yeah. He's just a totally wacky character who I would love to talk to.
Has he got Instagram?
No.
He's 70.
Okay. That's devastating. I just wanted to see him jump over shit in his backyard.
Yeah. He's an interesting character.
Anyways.
But, yeah.
So, second question. Max, what is something that you do every single day that you feel like is essential to the success of the day? I feel like you're going to say 5-minute flow. So, if that is your answer, what would the next answer be?
Okay. So, the next answer is... let's see. What is the next answer? Well, I can't tell you the actual next answer because I'd have to make you sign a non-disclosure agreement. But before the end of the year, everyone will know about this other project, and it's going to be a total game changer. And I know I can't like say anything, but it's really cool project I've been working on for like 9 months.
Okay. It's to do with fitness and training and stuff.
Yeah, it's actually a tool.
Okay.
But that's all I can tell you. Okay. Every day, play music for sure.
Mm.
Play music. Even if it's just drumming or singing, you know, I think a lot about what the best first minute or what the best first 5 minutes would be for someone who's like looking to make a change in their life. And, you know, probably dancing, actually. You know, for a lot of years, I didn't dance at all. Like, I was a wallflower. I would, like, just try to, like, look tough in the corner because that's what guys do when they don't dance. They, like, look tough in the corner. And as soon as I realized as an adult and I stopped giving, like, so many fucks about what everyone else thought, I realized, like, dance.